This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 17, Cinnabar. The tinny smell of fire and gunpowder burned Elias's nostrils, causing him to cough and hack as he ran. He moved a hand up to cover his face, hoping to block some of the acrid fumes the closer he got. Back on Avis, until his arrival, guns had been the height of warfare. But here, wars were still being carried out with sword and shield. He skid to a stop, the water sloshing uncomfortably against the knees of his pant legs. The Selkies had managed to moor their ships closer to the land, but as Elias looked up towards the largest vessel, he could see the Brotherhood swarming over it like ants. A ripple of anger flowed through him as another round of gunfire punctuated the air. Something was pulling him towards the fight, and he was ready to give in to it when the sound of the others splashing along somewhere behind caught his ear.
"Will you please slow down?"
Whipping around, Elias locked eyes with his doppelganger and shook his head.
"There's no time."
He thrust an arm out behind him, gesturing off towards the floating encampment.
"The Brotherhood has arrived, and by the sound of it, they are equipped with a few upgrades."
Eric pulled his foot up out of the mud with great effort, cursing when it caused his sandal to come undone. He reached for it, nodding towards the king.
"I get that the Brotherhood being here is bad, but why are we even here?"
"And either way, I need a breather."
Atlas trudged up, holding fistfuls of Barry's fur to stay upright. He was drenched head to toe, having tripped multiple times, and looked about ready to collapse.
"As countless partners will attest, my stamina is a thing of legend. But this body was not built for running."
Fighting down the expletives rising in his throat, Elias whirled around to face the encampment. With every round of gunfire that erupted into the still of the encroaching evening, cries of anguish followed. He took a calming breath and looked down at his reflection in the water.
"I may not get along with my mother-in-law, but she and everyone else on board are still citizens of Ebra."
He looked over his shoulder.
"And my wife may not think too kindly of me if I was to leave Tiani to die in there."
Eric brandished his sopping sandal at the king.
"And getting us killed helps them how?"
His voice grew dark as fury contorted Elias's features.
"Since when have you been such a coward?"
He slapped the doctor's shoe from his hand and shoved him back a step.
"We are three mages and a bear, technically,"
Atlas interrupted with a tutting noise and a waggle of his finger.
"Two mages, a bear, and an arcanist."
Elias growled, flinching reflexively as another round of gunfire rang out.
"Well, the odds may not be in our favor. I have faced worse and survived."
Eric shoved the king back in kind. Years of dealing with his own short-tempered brother came rushing back as he thrust a finger into the man's chest.
"You may have survived, but how many others did? Your track record for actually winning battles is worse than mine, and I don't like fighting." "That's not fair. Listen, I hate to interrupt this questionable tension between the two of you."
Atlas had waded over to them, fighting to keep his nethers from being exposed as the chilly water moved up towards his waist.
"But the last time we squared off against these blokes, I nearly bled out. So I'm not about to go in there without a plan."
Pinching the bridge of his nose, Elias let out a growl.
"We can fight and possibly save these innocent people, or we can flee and think back on our cowardice for the rest of our days."
When the others failed to meet his gaze, he nodded.
"Fine. Since you lack the spine, I shall go myself."
Snatching up his shoe before it drifted too far for him to rescue, Eric used his free hand to gesture back towards the airship.
"There is a third option.
we could just leave and not feel bad. He cracked a nervous smile.
It doesn't matter anyway.
Out of all of us, I thought you would argue most fervently towards saving them.
I agree with the king. What is wrong with you?
Eric motioned with both hands, attempting to placate the angry looks he was receiving from the others.
Hold on. Before you come unglued, hear me out.
He gestured off towards the ship.
That will never have happened if we go back and change the past.
Not that I'm arguing to stay.
Atlas's brows knitted together.
But it is happened. Happening right now.
Elias started to argue as well, but that word floated up to the front of his mind. Undo. The doctor had used it earlier, and despite his initial misgivings, the concept was now picking up steam in his head.
This will never have happened.
Eric nodded with a slight grin.
I know it sounds callous, but even if the Brotherhood kills everyone on board, it won't matter.
It would matter to them.
Eric winced at the accusatory tone in his head. He couldn't expect Wraith to understand. He lowered his voice, staring down at his shadow rippling on the water's surface.
It's not like I want these people to die, but if we go in there and get killed, who would go back and stop all this?
The greater good.
Elias felt sick agreeing with it, and he brought up a hand to rub at the back of his neck.
He wanted to, but he could find no fault in the logic.
Tiani may die, but she would live again. Even Lodhir would be returned to her side. Surely Pyra could agree with this logic. He was ready to turn his back on the notion of helping these people when another spray of gunfire rang out, followed by shrill cries and screams. Among the shouts, Elias heard his name, and he looked up to see Isla sprinting across the water towards him. She was clutching her shoulder with one hand, and an alarming amount of blood was running down her body.
You have to help us! The Brotherhood!
Isla collapsed, releasing her mastery of water to sink below the surface. She struggled to suck in a few soul-steadying breaths before she pointed back towards the floating encampment with her bloody hand.
You have to save my mother!
Theodore was no stranger to pain. It was such an ingrained part of his life, of who he was, that he even included it in his daily regimen. He forced himself to endure high levels of discomfort, and it toughened his interior response as well as his exterior. He could withstand anything and never bat an eyelash.
What are you doing?
Theodore attempted to wrench his arm free from the old man, but found the wizard's grip vice-like.
Hold still, you big baby!
Every time one of Wilfred's bony fingers touched a crystal protrusion, the pain it sent rippling through his body was like being stabbed by a million tiny knives, each one right on a nerve.
I'm not being a baby. You're just sadistic.
In all honesty, a bone saw probably would have hurt less. Wilfred belted out a hearty bark of laughter as he wrestled with the king's bodyguard, pulling the injured arm closer to his face. He tapped gently at the largest stone, then wiggled it back and forth like a loose tooth. He ignored the scream that followed. He dropped Tragedy's arm, looking up at him with a shake of his head.
I can't be sure without further testing. Follow me. Oh, and...
He rapped a knuckle against the workbench laden with food.
Bring this, will you?
Theodore tucked his injured arm against himself, using his other hand to grip the edge of the sturdy table. He followed the mad wizard along yet another dusty runner down another darkened corridor, each step punctuated by the sound of metal scraping against stone. It took several twists, turns, and even a terrifying jaunt on an upside-down walkway before he recognized where they were. They passed the stationary figure of Bob, still dutifully guarding the gallery door. Instead of stopping, however, they continued on until they came to a large oak door with no handles. Curiously, it only had a series of metal plates running horizontally at handle height. Theodore watched as the old man rummaged around his robes until he produced a tarnished brass ring and slid it onto his right index finger. Wilfred stared at the metal plates for a long moment, struggling to recall a memory from the vast depths of his brain. It took a couple of false starts before he remembered the pattern correctly and pushed the ring against the plates in sequence. He was rewarded with a satisfying click of a latch unhooking, and the door swung open. He looked over at Tragedy, gesturing with both hands, still shackled together, to enter the room first.
"Well, I haven't got all day. You interrupted my meal."
Running a hand through his bangs, Theodore obliged, dragging the table behind him as he stepped into a large, circular office. It was even more massive than the gallery, but just as filthy. There were two sets of spiraling iron staircases that led up to a second floor. Curved bookshelves lined the walls, and a lopsided desk that was propped up by a stack of dusty tomes. Cobwebs hung from just about every available surface. The windows were hidden beneath a thick layer of grime, and the specimen jars that littered every other shelf were either half evaporated or decayed completely. It smelled like an old bookstore, with a hint of cherry tobacco still trapped in the furniture. He pulled a face and turned to the headmaster.
"I would never have figured you for a slob."
Wilfred let out a sound of indignation through his nose as he pushed aside a teetering stack of papers to make it to the desk.
"This was the previous headmaster's office. Mine is immaculate. You could eat off the floor."
He pushed his hands between the middle of a pile of junk and shoved it to one side. Most of it clattered to the ground, but he didn't care. He opened one drawer, then another, until he found what he was looking for.
Although he did tend to keep a lot of fun little toys laying around.
Lifting an eyebrow, Theodore stared at the large, rusted key the old man was gleefully looking at before he managed,
"What is that?"
Questions!
Wilfred's grin only grew as he pushed the end of the key against the slot of the manacles on his wrist.
"Watch and learn."
Magic, of course, Theodore thought with a weary sigh. He rubbed at his temple as the old man pressed the massive key, obviously two sizes too big for the lock, against the manacle, but nothing happened.
"What? No!"
Wilfred smacked the old key repeatedly against his bonds.
"Bloody anti-magic doohickey!"
"I thought we were here to figure out what's wrong with me, not try and break you out."
Wilfred cocked a bushy eyebrow at the bodyguard.
"Oh, we are. It just would have been easier if I could use magic."
He tossed the key behind him and turned towards a dusty cabinet.
"Oh well, chemistry works just as well. Go and make us some lunch while I set things up."
"I'm not your maid."
Theodore was tired of being treated like a servant, and he folded his arms carefully across his chest. Wilfred belted out another bark of laughter.
"But you are desperate for my help."
He began rummaging through the cabinet, picking up and shuffling around grime-covered vials of liquid.
"Sandwich, now. The onion-glazed ham pairs well with the raspberry chutney and the smoked gouda."
He whipped around, nearly dropping a jar of red powder.
"And don't forget my kippas."
The old man had a point. He was desperate. Theodore began slapping together the ingredients requested, wrinkling his nose as he pried off a chunk of the cheese. He had never been a fan of the stuff, or anything that had to curdle and sit for months in a cave in order to be eaten. But the chutney smelled nice. All that was missing now was...
There aren't any kippers here.
Balderdash!
Wilford called from deep within a wooden trunk full of old copper braziers and cracked glassware.
I put them there myself. Keep looking!
Scanning the contents of the table once more, Theodore spotted a single remaining kipper on the ground by the door, an orange tabby snacking on it eagerly.
Yep, found it!
He snatched up a chunk of turkey and squatted down next to the furry thief.
Trade?
He shredded the meat, enticing the criminal away from his previous bounty.
Aha! There you are!
Wilford whirled around, clicking a pair of tongs together with a manic grin.
I have everything prepared. Where is my meal?
Theodore scratched the cap behind the ear, snapped up the slobbery remnants of the fish, and moved back to the table, slapping it on the plate. He thrust the food towards the wizard with a huff.
As requested. Now what?
Now we determine how royally screwed you are.
Wilfred took hold of Tragedy's arm. He pulled it straight out and tipped over a vial of clear liquid, allowing several drops to hit the area around the largest crystal.
Hey, what are you?
Theodore's flesh began to sizzle, and pain, like he had never experienced before, erupted through his veins. The series of high-pitched noises that escaped his lips were indecipherable, but they managed to convey his anger clearly enough. Pursing his lips, Wilfred waved off the other man's complaints.
Like I said, it would have been easier with magic.
He took a bite out of the sandwich, smacking his lips as he chewed, before he reached over and grabbed a bottle of purple liquid.
Give it here.
Theodore clutched at the searing flesh, backing away.
No!
Wilfred took another bite of his sandwich, his brows lifting in response.
Fine. Let it eat through your arm.
He gently shook the bottle in his other hand.
Or you can let me pour this inhibitor over it and counteract the reaction. Your call.
After a moment's hesitation, Theodore thrust out his arm. He watched, helplessly, as the old man dripped some of the thick mixture on the wound. He was surprised when the pain faded almost instantly. That was enough for one day, he thought, and he was ready to leave with or without an answer. But he was unceremoniously dragged towards a chair next to a comically large magnifying glass. Wilfred pushed the lens into place.
Now, I may be the current headmaster of this great school, but I am by no means a medical practitioner.
He dug through the many pockets of his robes to find a set of cracked spectacles. He shoved them up the bridge of his nose and leaned in, examining the interesting wound on the bodyguard's arm under a brighter light.
But seeing as the situation is a dire one indeed, beggars can't be choosers. Hold still.
He reached over and plucked up the pair of metal forceps. In one swift motion, he clamped them around the largest crystal and yanked. Theodore wanted to protest, but found his response cut off as the old man thrust a dusty book into his mouth. It did little to distract him from the agony roiling through him, and he screamed around the moth-eaten pages between his teeth. It felt like the mad wizard was trying to pull free the very bones of his forearm. He stomped his foot over and over again until thin cracks began to form in the tile.
Almost!
Wilfred wiggled the stone back and forth, ignoring the cries of pain from his patient. Another moment of labored tugging, and, with a tiny pop, the crystal broke free and slid out of Tragedy's skin without complaint. He lifted the purple stone to his face, adjusting his spectacles as he turned the slightly bloody rock over. The book slid from Theodore's mouth as the pain began to ebb away. His whole body shook with a cold sweat. His wound was on fire, and this was the most drained he had felt since landing half dead in that swamp almost a year ago. He managed to compose himself enough to glance down at the gaping wound in his forearm. There was a crater in his flesh, at the base of which was not skin or even muscle. A jagged, fractured stump of crystal still sat half an inch deep in his flesh.
I was correct earlier when I said this wasn't good.
Wilfred dropped the chunk of purple stone into an empty beaker and placed it over a small flame. The color began to slowly change from purple to dark orange.
In this world, there are two primary types of magical creatures. Ones that utilize magic, like Selkies or elves. And those who are magic, like the Dryads or the Twisted. But Goliaths are an anomaly. A rare third type of magical creature. They are conduits, a magical sponge, if you will.
Removing the beaker from the flame, he gently tipped out the orange stone onto the table.
These crystals are a natural way for a Goliath to exude excess magic from their bodies. While they are magic themselves, they also absorb ambient magic, or in some cases, directed magic. They simply take it all in, then excrete it. That's what makes them immune to most spells. Some Goliaths wear their crystals as a symbol of pride, or an expression of who they are. Since they are made of stone, a bit more doesn't hurt them.
Wilfred turned to Tragedy, narrowing his gaze.
But your kind aren't supposed to exist. Humans and Goliaths were never meant to breed with one another. In a world without magic, I imagine this never posed an issue for you. But here...
He clicked his tongue against his teeth several times as he snapped up the stone, turning it over in his hand.
Here, you will continue to absorb the ambient magic in the air, and it will crystallize beneath your skin, growing out from the calcium in your bones, until it punctures something vital, and you bleed to death.
Theodore stared at the glittering orange stone, his mind not quite able to grasp the immensity of what the old man was saying. A long moment passed before air escaped his lungs. He felt cold, hollow. He looked up into that wizened old face.
What about my sister?
For the first time, Wilfred's cold expression cracked.
I did not know you had. Is she like you?
Twins.
Wilfred looked at the man with wide, sympathetic eyes.
Then, yes, the same.
Theodore took a deep breath, attempting to center himself.
Is there anything that can be done to slow it or stop it?
Wilfred took the final bite of his sandwich, chewing thoughtfully for a long moment.
You cannot cure your genetics, but...
He lifted his manacled wrists.
The idiot in the flower shirt designed these to suppress my magic. Some nonsense to do with Brotherhood technology. I doubt it would stop the progression entirely, but it may slow the absorption. Assuming you do not get hit directly with any spells, of course.
Looking him in the eyes, Theodore wasn't sure if this was a ruse to escape.
Would a single manacle do the job?
It would help, but the set would be more effective.
Nodding, Theodore reached over and grabbed the metal tongs off the table. He snapped them in half and moved to the old man. Sliding the broken pieces into the lock, he used one as a torsion wrench while wiggling the second against the tumblers. In short order, he removed the metal bindings and slung them over his shoulder. Wilfred rubbed at his wrists.
You mean you could have done that at any time?
I grew up in Avis. Compared to that, any lock your world has produced could be picked with a banana.
Hesitating, Theodore bowed his head slightly.
Thank you for being honest and for helping. I have somewhere to be. Will you be all right on your own here?
Sympathy for me?
Wilfred scoffed as he pulled the platter containing the rest of his meal closer.
This sudden change of heart won't reconcile the misery you and your idiotic companions have wrought upon me. Begone!
He plucked up the fish, holding it by its tail, and waved off the bodyguard with it. Theodore could tell that the outburst had been mostly an act this time. As he walked through the door, a thought occurred to him.
I want to eat that kipper. Your cat was chewing on it earlier.
Wilfred stopped, the fish inches from his open mouth, before moving it out to arm's length.
Cat? I don't have a cat.
Elias reached down, pulling Isla out of the water. He steadied her, looking her over. The wound she was clutching at looked like nothing more than a graze. He fished the handkerchief from his vest pocket and placed it against her shoulder, staring into her familiar amber eyes.
Your mother still lives.
Isla bit at her lip, her gaze flashing back over her shoulder.
I was not in the room when the attack happened, but it looked like they had managed to barricade off the main structure. Although, I'm not sure how long it will hold.
Again, as much as it turned his stomach, this was not a battle he needed to fight.
Duty.
But they were his kin by marriage. He could not turn his back. Perhaps he didn't need to.
I once asked your father to help in dealing with the Brotherhood, and he promised me he would drag them to the depths.
Elias began rolling up the sleeves of his shirt, pushing them up past his elbows.
It's time I repay that debt.
He glanced back down at the young Selkie.
Tell Tioni that I am sorry this happened, but I will fix it. And I will find Pyra.
I don't understand.
Isla didn't want to venture back into the chaos where the monks in black robes were using magic sticks to injure her family and friends.
What are you going to do?
Elias didn't respond. He could hear the blood pumping past his ears, the angry buzzing in his mind growing to a fever pitch. If he and the others walked away, the Brotherhood would win, like they always did.
Vengeance.
He wanted it to end. He would send a message to their god, to the Scholar.
If what happens here today makes no difference, then let chaos reign.
The door in Elias's mind, the one he hadn't fully shut, flung open, and he felt a primordial power crackle down his spine. The energy radiating off him pushed the waters away like a giant ripple in a pond, leaving them standing in the mud as fish floundered around them. Connected to the ancient knowledge of the slumbering goddess within, Elias knew what to do. Beneath the mud were grasses and small plants submerged by the encroaching ocean, and many of the trees that poked out of the water were still alive. He pulled from all of it, absorbing and pooling the energy within himself. Vines began to wrap around his body, extending towards the tips of his fingers as Elias raised his right hand. His eyes focused on the floating barges. The water of the oceans pulled back, rising into a wall of churning liquid. His eyes flickered over to Isla, barely able to make her out over the swirling energy engulfing his body.
Hold your breath now, and when you reach the ship, find your mother.
Destroy!
The release of energy flung the young silky woman into the wall of water before it was forced forward as a massive tidal wave. It sucked in more and more of the sea until the wave was 30 feet high and approaching the encampment with a singular goal: to drown. It struck the vessels like a battering ram, forcing the amalgamation of boats to rock dangerously as the ocean flowed over the decks. Many of the occupants were flung overboard, and the momentum of the water carried them down along the swampy coast until they drifted from sight.
"What are you doing?"
Eric reached out, trying to spin the king around.
"You just killed Isla!"
He merely shrugged off the attempt.
"Selkies are phenomenal swimmers. I'm certain she will be fine. And if not..."
Elias turned to face his counterpart, his eyes swirling with purple energy.
"It doesn't matter.
More."
Elias could feel Ravaria taking root. A ripple of dread tore through him as he reached inside, feeling the depth of the well of power that still remained. He wouldn't allow the goddess free, and he released the remaining energy.
"No!"
Collapsing to his knees in the mud, Elias could feel the outward flow of power come to a shuddering halt. It welled up behind his eyes, causing his head to feel like it had been split in two. His fingers dug trenches in the mud as he struggled to grab hold of anything. He retched as he tried once more to open the floodgates. Bit by agonizing bit, he managed to leech the raw power back into the earth. And slowly, the door in his mind began to swing closed. Elias blinked away the beads of sweat that rolled into his eyes, and he looked up. The Arcanist and the bear had backed away, almost reaching the tree line. But Eric was towering over him, staring down at him with introspective disapproval.
"Even if the Selkies managed to survive that, what of all the others?"
"As you said, nothing matters."
Elias collapsed into an exhausted sitting position.
"Besides, they would have died regardless, at the hands of the Brotherhood. A small price to pay to destroy those fanatics before they could do more harm."
"For the greater good."
Elias nodded.
"For the greater good."
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron, in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
"And how, may I ask, did you get in here?" "What's that? You want more? My precious kippers want enough? Perhaps one of these deviled eggs?" "Well, too bad. I went through hell for this food, and I shan't be sharing any more of it." Hey, get off the table before you... "My deviled eggs, you little fiend! Get down!" "You did that on purpose, didn't you? Ah, it's a good thing you're so cute. I think I shall name you Chumbucket.